Oh, hey, Berlu. You're actually here with me for the ads this time, because I actually remembered to do them during the cast rather than always, like, a week later, like, oh, crap, I got to get them up. But you are here.
Yay.
I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to be back. Guys, up on this episode is going to be, it's a pretty awesome episode. We got Lilo Brancato from Bronx Tale and The Sopranos coming on, so I think you guys will enjoy it. And we talk a whole lot about a lot of really depressing stuff going on in the country. But let's talk about what makes this podcast possible. First, I'd like to talk about our good old sponsors at... let's start with Demented Brewing, Berlo.
Ooh.
Demented Brewing. Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. They have an awesome tap room with 16 rotating taps. Different things going on all the time. Every Sunday, there is a new release. They release things for their bottle club, which they call the Legion. Just a really cool place to go.
Awesome environment. Good people who work there. Had a great time podcasting there.
Yes. They just released Belladonna, which is a Berliner Weiss, this Sunday. Mm. This weekend, they're releasing a sour blonde ale aged in Chardonnay barrels and Tom Yum Bia, a Thai sour brewed with kefir lime leaves, garlingal root, lemongrass, and Thai chilies. I couldn't pronounce two of those ingredients, so it's going to be pretty damn awesome.
Sounds pretty freaking interesting. I might have to take a visit down there.
Yeah, so that'd be www.dementedbrewing.com. Sticking with our beer friends, good old Manskirt Brewing, which we should be going to hopefully next week. I know we got a couple things that happened. We had to reschedule. But Manskirt Brewing, another awesome brewery in the Hackettstown area, which has become like the brewery area now. Four of them up there. They're located in the historic bank building, and you can go check out Joe Fisher and his Manskirt, his kilt.
I had a great time. I had a flight there. Awesome beers, awesome selections.
Did you get to put his kilt on?
No, he said something about I'm calling the cops.
Yeah. They've got the NJ Fresh Tap Takeover number 4 at Hops in Morristown and the Big Brew Sussex Festival, which we did a couple years ago.
Mm.
I think 2 years ago already. On July 23rd. July 23rd, they will be there.
Nice.
So that is www.manskirtbrewing.com. Bringing us to our long-time original sponsor, the good old boys at Wolf Nation. WULF. Wake up, live free. Wolf Nation clothing for everybody. Grandmas, workout gear, dogs, your boys. You can get them a nice thing. You know, what's coming up? Nothing really is coming up.
August.
August is coming up for August this year.
Get August is Wolf Nation month, people. We declared it.
Just awesome brand, and basically the brand is all about just getting up and stop living, you know, your life paycheck to paycheck, trying to do your own thing, cutting your own teeth, making your way. So that is Wolf Nation, WULF Nation. Follow them on Twitter, on Instagram, Facebook. Just look up Wolf Nation. Finally, our good friends at Trivia Revolution.
Nice.
Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Mike Berlu comes every once in a while, and I host at Tap House 15.
Ace of Spades.
Wednesday nights. last week, one of the questions was, what card is the one-eyed jack? And Mike Berlu and his girlfriend responded, the Ace of Spades.
We didn't win, by the way.
No.
Just
but each week, Trivia Revolution gives away gift cards to various breweries around New Jersey. Mm-hmm. They give out gift cards to Tap House 15 in whatever location they're at. Each week, there's a bonus item that you and your friends can get. Get yourself points. You don't even have to be super smart to win a prize. You could be last place. Okay? Trust me. Berlu does it all the time. Also, if you are a New Jersey craft beer member, you will get extra points. Visit them. Go to check out Trivia Revolution on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Let's get ready to podcast, Berlu. You're like my Calogero, and I'm like De Niro.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Did I survive that movie? I forgot.
Nope.
Oh.
Okay, this is Russell Spate, a.k.a. Terry Tate, and listen to Verbal Shenanigans. Do not change that dial, or I'm going to come get you, son.
Oh! Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic,
which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Wow. Welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, Mike Berlew. Yay.
Same location, new location.
And we're kind of crammed in the back of a hall. Not even a hall, the corner of a room, basically.
Yeah, we got the little lake view on the side.
Lake view for if you want to take in some of the ambience. We apologize. We've been a little sporadic with our podcasting lately and a little light on our promoting the podcast. But I promise you, we are back. I said that last time, but we're back this time. For real.
Really?
For real.
Okay.
For real.
So what time next week?
So the next episode will be up 3 weeks from now. Oh. We're coming back with a vengeance here today, buddy. We got a big guest online. And we actually got two guests tonight. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it seems as if every time we podcast in between podcasts, there's some kind of national tragedy. Last time we podcasted between, we hadn't got to talk about the
Orlando
thing. This time we come back and America's basically ready to boil over. And this might be some of our last days here. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to the purge next week.
Yeah, the purge is coming and Civil War is basically here. I don't even know if it's coming. I think it may be here, but obviously you had the two deaths of what looked to be two African American guys who really didn't deserve to get blown away again. And with everything as tense as it is, you know that's coming. Okay. And then you had, of course, the Dallas shootings of the police officers, five police officers, and I don't know, something like 11 injured, like that.
Yeah, 11 injured.
So again, we're going to shit. We're going to hell in a handbasket quickly. So enjoy the ride, buddy.
Now, did anybody look at Facebook for the answers? Like,
yes,
there were some answers up there. I did.
I followed Facebook closely
why is it still going on?
I didn't have an opinion, but I jumped directly to Facebook to form my own opinion learn all about what I'm supposed to think.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let me get a pen and paper. All right, what's the first thing I should know?
I guess to talk about this, I guess the way to really start is with the two shootings by the cops.
Yeah.
Both of them bad. Obviously, there's not really much you can you can't really say anything but that. But the one that really stood out to me was the passenger side one, the guy in the passenger side of the car.
Mm-hmm.
I found the whole thing weird. One, because the guy's in the side of the car, and not one shot, not two, not three, but four shots, point blank. It takes this guy down, and he's bleeding out. But I also found the video. I don't know if you saw the video.
I don't think I saw the second one. I saw the first one with the guy pinned to the ground, and they yell, "He's got a gun in his pocket."
Yeah. That was bad. But the other one I'm talking about is he got shot four times in the past. And the video, his girlfriend's like filming him basically dying and bleeding out. And she's like, the cops just shot my boyfriend. He's bleeding out. And what I found strange about the whole thing was the way she was reacting. She was acting like almost like very calm. Like if you got shot next to me in a car.
Okay.
I'd be freaking out. Like I would thank the cops first off. But
would you be cheering?
Keep
going!
She seemed very like a matter of fact. Like, yeah, my boyfriend was shot. I can't believe the cops just did that. So I found that really weird. And I can't find an excuse for that. Now, we'd never know the entire story of these things. Did he reach for a weapon? I don't know. But I don't know. Four shots to the chest from point blank seems a little excessive. Same thing with the other one. Now, there are so many ways, so many angles you can take on all these things, but I think to me the hardest thing about this all is how it's covered in the media. It's just ridiculous. The media wants war. They want you to take the cop side or the black side, right? They want to cause this this rift, so it just causes headline. We can cut to footage of protesters. We can cut the footage of police officers' funerals and stuff like that. And I think it's atrocious, and like you don't see any coverage. If that guy, okay, it's the first one, Alton Sterling, right? Is his name?
I believe so. Yeah.
If that was a white man, okay, that was shot, it would not be a cover. It might have been covered in the local news, maybe on the paper. It would not be national headline. So the first thing that has to come out is, you know, a black man shot by white cops or whatever it is. You know, it's treated, it's immediately an issue. You know, those hot button words. That headline nowadays is instant. Bazillion people tuning into the channels, the networks, the internet, the TV shows, the news around the clock, you know, like.
So basically we should name all our episodes those three things.
Black man shot by Berlew.
I saw this one before.
I mean, I hate that it's this one side of it, because my personal opinion is there is so much wrong on both sides, you know. Starting with the black light. If you are an African American in this country, you have every right to be upset by this. Okay? You know, you see these guys getting shot point blank that's what we see. We see one thing after another. And, you know, it is a problem. If you are a white male in this country or a non-black male, it is, you know, like, these kinds of things don't get covered. You don't see your, quote unquote, your brothers and sisters being blown away. And I don't know. So it's just, there's a lot of ways to look at it.
Yeah, it's one of those sad things where it's pick a side and nobody can go in between. There's no gray area, it seems, when we get into these subjects. There's nobody trying to have a round table. Okay, let's discuss it out. Let's pinpoint each little thing and try to resolve the issue. And it just seems like the second you go, oh, the poor black people, you hate cops. If you go, oh, what happened in Dallas, it's tragic. Yeah, but protesters and look what they do, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, I hate you go on, like, the social media warriors. You get people like, you know, oh, well, if this person, they shouldn't mess with the cops, they should have obeyed the cops. You know, that's no excuse to lose your life over, you know? Regardless, I don't care if the guy is, apparently that Alton Sterling guy, very checkered past. It really doesn't matter. It should not matter. It should not be, police should not have to take him down with five straight shots to the chest from point blank. You know, like, I understand why the outrage, you know?
Yeah, well, one of my biggest things with Alton is in Louisiana they have cameras on the cops, and everybody's going, okay, let's see the footage. It's like, well, the cameras fell off during the thing, and that should be like the first thing investigated. Okay, this was supposed to be to prevent the situation, prevent us from saying, hey, you're a dirty cop, hey, he was a guy trying to kill a cop. That's the whole point. So why does the cameras magically fly off?
And then you go to the cop shot in Dallas. Like, how sad is that? You know, like, because of something that, it's like any job. One batch of bad something spoils it for everyone. You know, if there's a bad teacher in a school, the building's under investigation. If there's a bad, you know, whatever it is, a teammate, your team's got media all over them, you know? So you get a couple cops that maybe pulled the wrong thing. Now, I don't know what it's like to be a cop. I'm sure it's high stress in certain areas, you know, with everything going on, it's, you know, you really got to be thinking all the time, you know, that adrenaline kicks in, God knows what. But I do know that, I mean, those deaths, and you see videos more and more of these guys, like, I don't know if you saw a couple weeks ago that guy get tased to death. Like, I just kept, it was in Jersey.
Heard the video.
He just continuously tased the guy, and he died. Yeah. Like, something like that is going to ruin the image of all the cops, you know. Yeah. I got cops in my family, you know. I got a couple cops in my family, and you know, I feel bad for them. I even texted my buddy Brian after this all happened. I said, "Hey, just you know, lay low these next couple of days. Be careful out there. You know, you never know what can happen." But anyway, think about that. So something that happens in wherever we're talking, Minnesota. Now, five families in Dallas, you know, have lost their son or daughter. You know, like, it's just amazing how one thing triggers another. Like, someone you'll never know, you'll never talk to, you lost your life because of their actions.
And who knows what this guy, the shooter, was going through. Maybe he was a little schizo beforehand. He was in the military. I mean, he was a professional shooter.
Well, you didn't know Obama ordered that.
Oh.
You didn't know that?
Oh, I didn't know. I Sorry, I didn't read my CNN today.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite Facebook things. Somehow, there's a mass shooting in Dallas, and within 6 hours, people putting up, well, if Obama wasn't in office, this would never happen. The country hates each other so much more because of Obama. It's like, wow, that was a quick jump there.
Yeah, you know what's really sick? I mean, he was in Europe, and he's stopping early to go to the funerals in Dallas, so he's going to be gloating all the time. He called me, look what I did. I'm the president. I did that. Look at me. Look at me, Obama-wing.
This is why I can never be right or left. Yeah. Because and then the left, it's like, I see people like, some people have been on our show before posting things like, oh, if white conservatives didn't blah, 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 this wouldn't have happened. Because, and then it's like, well, they're only sympathizing with black people. Meanwhile, they're like almost like saying, well, families of cops are going to have to die until we do something. It's like, no, you know, like, no, like, stop it. You can't be that liberal where everything, like, I almost feel like some people, they fight so hard for things that don't even affect them that they start to just sound like idiotic. They sound idiotic. It's like, okay, so you're fighting, you're, in one moment, you're all about transgender rights, gay rights, black people rights, but God forbid if it's a white male, that's like the end of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like the end of the world. So,
well, knows we got plenty of those, so don't worry about it.
Oh, and if you're religious, forget it. So every religious white person, you're just behind the eight ball to some people. The liberal side drives me nuts too. But
you know, it's one thing I'm shocked the liberal side didn't go out with. Two of the biggest shootings is Florida and Texas, two of the biggest NRA positive open carry states.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised nobody's going, well, where's all those good Samaritans who keep on saying, if I was there with a gun.
I saw a post. I saw one. It was like, oh, well, there were this many open, you know, people, open carry people in where the shooting was. Where were they when this was going down? It's like, I don't know.
You can't win.
You can't win. You can't win. And how about just like there's a brooding civil war in our country because of this? And I'm completely convinced it's not because of your president. It's not because of, you know, the actual events that happen. It's because of the media, and it's because of social media and the way people react. And they just divide themselves. And somewhere along the line, it got to a point where there's no thinking or disagreeing is not allowed. Conversation's not allowed. It's you're one thing or the other. That's it. It's black or white. No pun intended with what's going on. But we have to shift gears real quick.
Well, I just want to say, during the Civil War, I'm on Iron Man's side.
I was Team Iron Man, too, but Iron Lives Matter. So we got to shift gears. A couple weeks ago, which I want to talk about later, but I was on a show down in AC. I got to open up for Bob Levy.
Oh, nice.
Pretty cool. Very nice guy. Funny guy. Great comic. But on the show was Lilo Brancato.
Okay.
Now, if you don't know him, the names might sound familiar. There's a lot of things that are associated with the name. Number one being Bronx Tale. Okay. One of my favorite movies of all time, hands down.
I actually saw it this Sunday. A very good movie.
Oh, you never had seen it
before?
First
time
in my life. Oh, God. Calodro. So he is the boy that plays Calodro or C throughout the movie. One of my all-time favorite movies from start to finish. I was huge into mob movies when I was a kid. Not even when I was a kid. My favorite movies are Goodfellas, Bronx Tale. To an extent, Godfather. I like all of them. The Casino, I love. That's
a funny thing. I was never into mobster movies, but as I slowly watch them, I'm like, oh, snap. This is some good stuff.
Yeah. We got to rush a little bit here because I have to call him at 7 o'clock sharp, and it is 6:59. But on the show was Lilo Brancato. Now, that name is also associated with some major headlines in the news because he was on... He was involved in a murder trial, and he did a Q&A at the comedy shows, and it was all about his life with addiction and stuff like that. So hopefully we get into it with him now, and then afterwards I'll kind of talk more about what was going on.
All right,
and then we
can
always piece it together later if I have to. All right. Lilo Brancato. Now, also if you're a Sopranos fan, he was on Sopranos. You know,
I'm going to be asking him a lot of Pluto Nash questions.
He was in Pluto Nash?
Yeah.
Let's just do the whole interview of Pluto Nash. All right, here we go. Lilo Brancato. Let's see.
Hello?
Hey, Lilo, it's Scott Brennan. How are you?
Hey, Scotty. What's up, my man? How's everything?
Everything's good, man. We were just talking about how I did this show on AC, and, you know, I was hosting the show and got to meet you, which was completely random, but long story short, welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Lilo, so this also this is my co-host here, Mike Berlow. You can hear him.
Evening, Lilo.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Doing good, my friend. Yourself?
I'm well, thank you.
Lilo, there's a million things we can talk to you about, but we'll kind of comb through a couple things here. Most people, I would assume, there's two major things that might know you from, and one would be one of my all-time favorite movies, which is The Bronx Tale. Now, obviously, you played C or Calogero. How old were you when you were involved in that?
I was 15 turning 16 when they found me on the beach in Jones Beach in Long Island. I was 15, and in a month or so after that, I turned 16.
By when you say found you on the beach, like did you were like laying on the beach and they were like, "Hey, you're Calogero?"
Well,
like
yeah,
how'd that work?
They were handing out flyers. It was like an open call audition. They were going to like local schools, and you know, just all over the five boroughs. They wanted an actor with no acting experience. They wanted the role, and you know, the actor to be very authentic in the role. Hmm. And having an open call audition.
Go ahead.
How many did you have to compete against to get the role?
Definitely thousands. I mean, every kid in New York City wanted to play that role. I mean, everyone. I had relatives that read for the role. And, you know, at that point in time, I didn't really put much thought into wanting to be an actor. That's not really what I wanted to do. But at the same time, I was young. And I didn't know what I wanted to be in life. You know, I was just enjoying my youth. Right. I was in high school, and the summer had just been, you know, it was July 5th, 1992 when they found me on the beach. I was just enjoying my summer vacation, having fun.
So you're enjoying your summer vacation. So long story short, somehow you land the role co-starring with Robert De Niro. That's got to be, you know, like, did you know, like, when you were going through the auditions, did you guys know he was part of it, or was it like they kind of kept
that
on the
absolutely. Oh, okay. I mean, when they found me on the beach, I was in the water. My brother called me out of the water because there was a guy, his name was Marco Greco. He was actually from the neighborhood where the film took place, and he worked at the Belmont Playhouse, and he was chosen and hired to be a scout on the film. And he was handing out flyers. He was handing out flyers on the beach, you know, seeking 8 to 9 year old boy, 16 to 17 year old boy, and once and you know, and all my friends, because Jones Beach in Long Island and you know, Section 4 would be, you know, there was a lot of Italian kids that hung out there.
Yeah,
it was predominantly Italian kids, so that was a good place for them to go and scout for, you know, an actor. And once my brother read it, he automatically, you know, knew and thought that I would be perfect for the role. So he, you know, he told the guy to hold on, because the guy was just giving out flyers and going to walk away to the next group of people. Hmm. But my brother said, hold on, you know, let me get my brother. I want you to meet him. I think he'd be perfect for this.
My buddy Mike hands out those same flyers at the beach, but he gets arrested pretty often.
Those 9-year-olds keep on asking me what I'm doing this for. I'm like, be quiet. Just look at the camera.
Yeah, that's funny.
And now you're actually Colombian. How did you get into like an Italian heritage or act Italian, if you will?
Well, I was adopted when I was 4 months old into an Italian family.
Oh, all right.
And my parents are both immigrant Italians. So I spoke Italian in my home with my grandmother, and I grew up with the Italian traditions and values and customs.
Yeah.
So I grew up, you know, I mean, I was, my blood is, you know, Colombian, because that's, you know, my biological parents were Colombian.
Right.
But I don't know much about that nationality and much about, I mean, I do a lot of, you know, reading, and I did read up on, you know, Colombia and the kind of country that it is and what its, you know, major, you know, natural resources are and just a lot about it. But I don't know too much about, you know, the people and their traditions, their customs. I know a lot more about Italian, so I really consider myself Italian.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly sound it. So don't you got that locked down, Lilo? So you get thrown into you know, like I said, we're acting with De Niro. What is, you know, what is it like? You're basically the main role in that movie. I would say, you know, you're split between not, and not only are you working with De Niro, there's so many good actors in that film.
Chaz Palminteri, you know, Joe Pesci.
It's unbelievable. So what is it like for you? Are you calm? Are you panicking on set? Or is it just kind of, since you've never been an actor, you're just kind of rolling with it? How does it work?
You know, by the time we actually, you know, shot the film, I, you know, gotten to know him.
Okay.
You know, it was like a month every single day that we were together. So when we actually got, you know, the cameras are actually rolling, you know, those nerves and that nervous, you know, that anxiety of just being around, you know, my idol kind of went away by then. But it was still so surreal. I couldn't really grasp, and just like, you know, at that age, you don't really appreciate what that is. I mean, just because, you know, that age, the things that come into your life, they feel like they almost like we're supposed to be there.
Right.
Because you're just growing up, and it's like, okay, this is just something else. And, you know, that's part of growing up. But now that I'm, you know, almost 40 years old, and, you know, that was when I was 16. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I look back, you know, in hindsight and say, damn, that was like the opportunity of a lifetime. Like, damn, what I would do to go back to that, and the things that I would do differently this time around to capitalize more on that opportunity. But, you know, that's not the way it works, you know?
It was funny the other night when you were on stage, you were talking about the De Niro thing a little bit, and like you were doing some of his mannerisms, and dude, some of them, you look like the two of you could be like brothers, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's a big reason why, you know, I won that role.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's, I mean, let's, I can act a little bit. I can act a little bit also. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure that was also a necessary part of getting the role.
100%.
But, you know, the strong resemblance, you know, is definitely a big reason, you know, because it's real. Like, you can actually buy the fact that, you know, I was his son.
Now, with you not having any experience, did the acting come natural to you? Were you trying to just listen to the director, or were you trying to ad-lib a little bit when you first started?
It kind of came natural, and that role for me wasn't much of a stretch, because that was like a kid that I pretty much was in my own life. So it wasn't like, you know, it was just pretty much reading lines. It came natural. I knew where to take my beats, and I just knew how to act the writing out. And, you know, like I said, that character was pretty much me. You know, he was the same age. He grew up kind of the same background, you know, middle class, and his father was a hardworking guy, just like my father. And, you know, he was, you know, just a confused kid and torn between the two men, you know, and it's a lot of that, you know, went on in my life. So it wasn't really much for me to do, you know.
So
other than have to act, but it didn't really, you know, it didn't really demand for me to dig deep and, like, you know, play something that I wasn't, you know.
Right. I mean, and you went on not just Bronx Tale. You went on to do a whole bunch of different cool things. I mean, obviously The Sopranos being the next, you know, one that I think people would recognize the most. I mean, that's another series you get into. I mean, obviously TV now, but you're surrounded by what people consider the best of the best in the acting world. So many just amazing actors and actresses. It's like, it's almost like you struck hot twice. Like, you couldn't ask to. If I look at my resume, I got Bronx Tale and Sopranos on it. You're doing pretty good, man.
Yeah, not a bad resume, you know.
No, and Pluto Nash.
Not a bad. Oh, Maya, please don't bring that up. No, but you know what? At the same time, listen.
Hey.
Every actor makes bad films. There's not one actor you can say in Hollywood that has made, that every film that they've made was great. You know, every actor misfires.
Lilo, if you put me in Pluto Nash 3 right now, I would be the happiest man alive.
Yeah, well, I heard there might be a part 2, so I'll keep you guys in mind and, you know. I'll send you over the script. No, but you know what, though? At the same time, you know, I mean, I got to work with Eddie Murphy in that, you know, and I got to meet him. And, you know, that was, you know, I mean, I grew up watching, you know, Delirious
and Raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, that was a very, very talented guy, because I myself like to do impersonations and stuff like that, and he was like the king of that, you know?
Yeah, so The Sopranos, like, how many seasons were you on that?
I was in one season.
One season. So what?
Yeah, I was on the second season.
Now, like, it's pretty cool because if you watch, like, I love all the mob movies, like many people do. I was just talking to Mike before this, how Goodfellas, Casino, you know, Bronx Tale, all of them. It's amazing how many, and then you get to The Sopranos, how many of the same guys you see throughout. It's almost like a community there.
Wait, say that part again. It's amazing how many guys what?
How many guys you see throughout all those movies kind of come back, and they all have roles in different ones. It's like this a community actors. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, like these, you know, character actors.
Right, right.
And now I guess they have a formula. I mean, I guess they've recognized that it was a formula that worked one time, so why wouldn't it work again?
Right, right.
You know, yeah, a lot of these guys, like, you know, a guy like in particular, like Frank Vincent.
Right.
Frank Vincent, yeah, he's great. I mean, he was in all three. He was in Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
He played, Billy Batts. Who was a real, yeah, you know, that's all real. That was a real character.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I read the book.
You know, that's a real, that's a real character. And what people don't know is that Billy Batts was directly in John Gotti's crew.
Right.
He was remember they said he was a Gambino guy and right. He was a maid guy, and in order to kill a maid guy you had to get permission. Like, that was, you know, that's real. He was really a Gambino guy. He was part of, you know, John Gotti's crew, and we all know John Gotti was, you know, a real badass and probably one of the baddest ever.
Yeah.
And he lived for the life, and he was about, you know, everything he spoke about and everything, you know, I mean, he was Cosa Nostra. You know, you got a lot of guys, they say and do whatever, but that guy died in, you know, in prison with cancer and never said a word. And, you know, I mean, that guy was the real deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, what many people, you know, like in the film Goodfellas, Pesci's character, whose, you know, real name was Tommy D. Simone, okay, there's a book that's coming out that the person, you know, like in the movie, it shows his own guys killing him. Remember when they go,
right.
he goes to get made, mm-hmm. and they kill him in the room? In yep. this new book coming out, they reveal that John Gotti was the one who personally shot him in the back of the head.
Wow, because himself,
that was,
huh?
Yeah, that was the guy. No, there's a book. Google that. Yeah, and there's a book, that there was a few reasons that they wanted that, you know, that Tommy Lee Simone dead. Because he was doing fresh things to Henry's wife was one of the reasons. Number two, he didn't want to kill Stax at first, you know, Samuel L. Jackson's character. Yep. That'll really push him to do that. And also when they did the Lufthansa heist, he pulled his mask off for a second because he was sweating and someone recognized him. So there's a few reasons why he had to go. But John God, you know, it was just a little bit. But, I mean, Goodfellas is probably the best mob movie ever.
I agree. 100% agree. So The Sopranos was a beneficial thing for you, obviously.
Oh, The Sopranos was, oh, man. I mean, you know, I worked with Gandolfini on Crimson Tide. And, you know, I knew him from, you know, years before. But never did I know that, you know, I mean, I always knew he was, you know, a good actor. He was in that. He was in True Romance. But never did I know that he had in his arsenal what it took to play that role, you know, at that caliber. You know, that was probably one of the best performances by an actor ever. That guy was unbelievable. You know, like, I mean, you know, I think he was the best gangster, Italian gangster ever portrayed on film was James Gandolfini as Tony Soprano.
And from what I hear, one of the nicest guys ever. I used to work with his niece. So, she said he was just like the nicest man ever.
Yeah, nothing like Tony. He didn't speak with that Jersey, Italian accent. He was very, very articulate and very, you know, pronounced every word in its entirety. He was really, really, you know, really a sharp guy. And a great, great actor in person.
Now, your character got murdered in The Sopranos, so I guess my question is were you bummed when you found out you were going to go, or is it something like, all great actors in mob movies get that one where they get knocked off?
After the success of the first season, because no one, you know, I did read for the first season, I didn't get the role.
Right.
But they said they liked me and they would bring me back, and they did, actually cast me in one of the roles. I don't think anybody on the planet knew how big that show was going to be. And then in the second season, you know, it had such a following by then because it was such a hit, you know, television show. And, I mean, just to be, you know, in the 5-6 episodes that I was in was a blessing.
100%.
So, you know, just to say, yeah, I'm on The Sopranos and I got, you know, a good role, you know. People are going to see me, you know, alongside these, you know, these great talents.
Yep. It was amazing. So, Lilo, like, unfortunately, the second part, the reason we met was you were in AC. We were with Bob Levy and the other guys, and you were doing a Q&A on your life kind of where your life took a turn. It's no secret. I mean, if you were involved in a lot of different things, but a major case and whatnot. But you really, when I saw you, and I was just really just fascinated just listening to you talk about your life's battle with addiction and whatnot. So I'd love to hear, of our audience to hear a little bit of your story, because it is absolutely fascinating and it's got a lot of angles to it and whatnot. But the way you told it.
Well, where do you want me to start?
So when did it all, like, the addiction start? When did you start see your life going a little bit downhill with the drugs and whatnot?
I mean, early on, I just noticed, I started, smoking pot in, 92. In 93, I started with, the hallucinogenics. And then it was, late 93, 94 when I started with the cocaine. And, I remember when I first did it, I loved it. It was, it was great. Damn, why didn't I do this sooner? And, that euphoric feeling doesn't last. It gets worse and worse, the experience. When you do, it gets worse and worse, but you're still trying to chase that first high. It never comes. It's like a dog chasing his tail. Right. He's never going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw early on my reaction to it. And that's what they define an addict as, not by how much he consumes, but by his reaction to it. And I just saw the way I reacted when I was on drugs, as opposed and compared to my friends and people around me. And I was just different, and I just seemed like I had more of a problem, and I just would. And so it was started in 94, and it just spiraled out of control for 10 years, and it just got worse and worse and worse, to narcotic pain medication, to then heroin, which I only snorted, never used intravenously, crack cocaine, and it just got worse and worse. And then, on December 10th, 2005, I was at the point where I was a full-blown crackhead and heroin addict, and I was with my ex-girlfriend's father. We went to, try to get more drugs. And, I was trying to go through the window. I broke the window. New York City police officer lived next door. He heard the broken glass. He came out. He said to me, "Don't move." So I was startled, and I turned around to see who it was. And he, I was shot. I was shot two times. And, and then I, got out of there real quick. My adrenaline was, through the roof, and enabled me to find a safe place, my fight or flight. And I didn't know at that time that my co-defendant, my girlfriend's father, that he was armed. So when I left to find a safe place, a gunfight ensued between the two of them, which I later on found out I didn't know what it was. But they were, shooting at each other, and my co-defendant, he had gotten shot 9 times, and he was able to get off 2 shots. Because I know this for a fact, because I had the evidence and the discovery in the case file,
right.
And I went through everything, every piece of evidence. And one of the bullets, he shot the police officer and pierced his heart, .357 caliber, hollow tip bullet, and shot him at about 5:23 a.m. And by 6:17 a.m., he was pronounced dead on the scene. So, they, thought we were in the commission of a burglary, which we really weren't. It looks like that because of a broken window, but that doesn't necessarily mean, burglary. I mean, I used to do that to my friends when they wouldn't wake up in the middle of the night and I wanted them to, give me drugs.
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm burglarizing their house. It means I'm I'm destroying private property. It's far from a burglary. But it's hard to sell that, when there's a dead cop, there's a broken window, and you got to go through the, you got to go through the system, and you got to sit, you got to lay up in Rikers Island, which is a city jail, for a few years, and then I was charged with murder, felony murder, because it was in commission of what they thought was a burglary. 3 years later, I went to trial. I was acquitted of murder, acquitted of burglary charges, but unfortunately, I was convicted of an attempted burglary in the first degree. And I was sentenced to 10 years, as a result of the conviction.
It's unbelievable. And you were saying on stage that you had gotten shot, not really knowing, and then you were, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said you were getting taken care of, and then you were placed under arrest. You didn't even know what had happened, right?
Right. I was in Jacoby Hospital in the Bronx, and, you know, the ambulances came on the scene. They needed three. They call them buses. They needed one for, you know, the police officer, the one for my, you know, for Steven, my co-defendant, and one for myself. And I remember in the ambulance, I was trying to say I didn't do anything. You know, I was just shot for no reason, and I didn't do anything. But for some reason, no sound was coming out of my mouth. And it just felt like my body was shutting down, you know, one organ at a time. I really thought I was going to die at that point. And then I just remember passing out, and I don't remember anything else. And then I guess they did the emergency, you know, the surgery, because a bullet was lodged, you know, inside me. I lost my spleen, part of my colon, had a collapsed lung. I was on life support. And you know, I was in and out of it. And that's when, you know, I don't remember, it was a day or so later, someone came to, I think it was a doctor, he came to the bed with the cover of the newspaper, and he said, "Are you proud of yourself? You and your friend killed a cop." And, you know, I didn't even know what happened back at the house, because I walked all the way down the sidewalk to try to get to where my car was. And I didn't know that there was, you know, I didn't know that the guy was a cop. I didn't know that he got shot. I didn't know that Steven had a gun. I didn't know any of that until later on. All I heard was bang, bang, bang. You know, that could have been, I didn't know if there was another guy. He never identified himself as a police officer. So when I found that out, that was like the worst possible thing that could have happened. It happened.
Wow.
So when they,
that's, you know, with all that being said, you know, I take full responsibility for how my, you know, my drug addiction, my bad decision making, you know, how that all contributed to the, you know, the life and to the death of a, you know, heroic New York City police officer.
Now, when you got captured, where did they send you to, and were you able to get clean, or is it kind of like what we see in movies and stuff where there's drugs in the jail
system?
No,
there's drugs. I got high for about a year after, you know, being incarcerated, and then on November 12, 2006, I overdosed in my cell. I did a little too much. I did morphine. I was doing heroin. I was getting it right, you know, right in the facility, and I still continue to use even after that. And then, you know, they took your analysis. I was found dirty, and then I got convicted and was sent to punitive segregation, which is the box.
Oh.
I got 90 days of that. And then when I was there, I just remember getting a visit from my cousin and my friend. They're both attorneys. They came on an attorney visit, and they were very disappointed in me. And I remember going back to my cell after that visit and doing a lot of thinking and saying, you know what, I got to stop this shit. And I never got high again, and that was November 18th, 2006, and this November will be 10 years.
Not good. Congratulations, man. Yeah, you talked a lot about how you said in prison, it was almost as easy to get drugs as it was on the streets, you were saying. You said you were getting from someone at church.
Money. If you had money, yeah, you had the money, you're fine. You can get drugs, you know. Because it's, you know, like these, you understand, COs only make so much money. You know,
right.
Make $60,000-$70,000 a year. When they can go get heroin on the street for $100 for 10 bags and then come into prison and sell it for like $30-$40 a bag,
right.
It's very tempting. You know, cigarettes, which is tobacco, which is contraband in city jail. You know, they got pouches that they go buy at the store for $2-$3 and then they sell them in the jail for $30-$40.
Yeah.
So you better believe a lot of that is happening.
It's unbelievable.
So, yeah, no, it happens. Yeah. Just so, different personalities. One guy will do it and one guy won't, you know?
So you have seemed to obviously gotten your life together. You know, you said you got 10 years clean. What have you been trying to do to move past the incident, to live your life? Like, I know you're doing, you know, even the other night you came and you talked to random audiences about your experience. What are you doing now? Like, what is your everyday life? How do you keep yourself clean? Things like that.
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you, to keep myself clean, you know, I don't really attend many meetings because I don't believe in a lot of the principles at Narcotics Anonymous meetings.
Right.
They set you up to fail there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things keep coming back. You know, if you relapse, so they're letting you know that it's okay to relapse, just keep coming back. You know, I believe, like, when you have so many years clean, I think, you know, if you do relapse, I got to say, it boils just to the fact that you're weak, because I've been clean for 10 years. I would never even think about going back and getting high.
Okay.
Because my life is so much better, and all the seeds that I've planted over the years of being sober, and I've watched so many great things come to fruition, that I would never, ever go back. you know, and in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, one of the first steps is that we realize that we're powerless. You're not powerless. You're far from powerless. You're powerful. And I just, it just sets you up to fail, you know?
Right.
But whatever I've been doing, it's been working. And I just thank God, you know what I mean? Because without him, none of this, you know, this is possible. But, you know, and I'm not trying to sound cocky, but I have a system. It works.
Yeah.
I'm sober. You know, I got my routine. I'm still very regimented like I was in prison. Like, you know, I do the same things at the same times every day. I work out twice. I do my business phone calls during the day. I still, you know, do my mopping and sweeping in the house on the days that I did it there. And it works for me. I have that structure and it works.
I mean, that's good for you. So what is it that you – are you trying to get back into the acting world or you just –
Yeah, well, I did like – you know, I did three films. I did one where I played a priest called Monsters of Mulberry Street.
Right.
I did one called Back in the Day. It was just in theaters with Alec Baldwin, Mike Tyson, Michael Madsen. Danny Glover was in it. So it was, you know, you know, my friends William DeMeo, Paul Borghese.
Yeah.
I did this only one called Vamp Bikers, low budget, but it was cool. It was a cool role. And, you know, I'm auditioning. I actually got a big audition tomorrow for a really, really great filmmaker. I don't want to mention his name or anything.
No problem.
I just don't want to jinx it, but it's big. It's real big.
So,
you know, I raised money to do my own documentary. So I got some stuff going on. And it's only going to get easier from here. You know, it took some time for the smoke to clear and just the whole politics and everything that I was involved in. And I know it's going to take time, and you know, I spent 8 years behind bars. You know what I mean? So I've learned to, you know, to grow patient. I've acquired patience, wisdom, and the things necessary to just know that it's going to happen when it's meant to.
Do you still have a good rapport with the police and everybody in your neighborhood after all this?
In my neighborhood, yes, more so, yes, because you know, from Yonkers, which is. A lot of the cops that were cops before I got in trouble are still cops now, and a lot of these guys know me, and they've known me, and they've seen me grow up and know that I'm not capable of the things they wrote about me and the things that they said I was capable of, and they know that it's all bullshit. But as far as good rapport with cops, you know, overall, no, I wouldn't say I had a good rapport with cops overall.
Right.
It's, you know, but you know, I can't really change the way they think, but right. And I can't control it. But the only thing I can do is control my own actions, and I'm going to try to, you know, and not try, but I'm going to make them as positive and try to help as many people as possible through my own experience and sharing my own experience with others, to, you know, in hopes to deterring them from doing what I did and the road that and the path that I went down. And hopefully, you know, people will recognize that, and I'll have, you know, many more people on my side. And for the ones that never will be, you know, you just kill who you can't change them, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Life goes on.
Well, Lilo, just, you know, meeting you, talking with you, performing with you and whatnot, it's a real pleasure. And I find it very cool how open and honest you are about, you know, a terrible thing that happened to you in your life and other people's lives. And but, you know, I like how you're trying to inspire rather than, you know, be angry about it. You seem to be, you know, trying to help people not do what happened to you. And I respect that for sure. Real quick.
Yeah, because that's what God wants. That's why God spared me my life. You know, I could have been dead, you know, overdosing. I could twice. I could, you know, shot. You know, a lot of different times I could have been dead, or I could have been away for the rest of my life. But God, you know, saw a reason for me, for that not to happen to me. And I guarantee you it's not for me to come out and do the same shit I was doing before. It's to use my experience and to help others. And I recognize that. And, you know, and that's what I intend to do. That's what I intend on doing.
Lilo, I know you're pressed for time here, so thank you so much for coming on. If people want to check you out, where can they go? If they want to send a message to you, if they hear this on Twitter or whatnot, where can they see what's going on?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's Lilo, Lillo _ Brancato, Brancato. And on Twitter, it's Lilo Brancato, Lillo, Brancato.
Awesome, man. And when the big Pluto Nash news comes out in the next few weeks, we'll tweet it for you.
Yeah,
right?
You guys will be the first two I call, all right?
We will.
All right, you guys will have you personally come in, you read for Eddie, all right?
All right, awesome.
All right, guys.
We will.
Thank you for
it was
your
awesome.
Time.
Thank you so much,
it.
Man.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Pleasure.
Take care, guys.
Well, I told you we'd be back.
Yeah.
It's a good one, you know. It's not a... It's not a, happy story. You know, there's it's a guest where you can see both sides of things.
Yeah.
But like I said, meeting him and hearing his story, the open and honest part of it, and you know, he's not hiding anything that happened.
No.
You know, and he, you know, a very honest guy. You know, and it's America. Everyone deserves a second chance. You know, like everyone deserves a second chance. But let's take a quick break. All right, so Lilo Brancato there, buddy.
Yeah, he had a full story there.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's one of those guys, obviously, if we had hours with him, we can probably keep going and going. He could just talk about Jail, or just talk about Bronx Tale, or just talk about Sopranos. So, just talk about his case, and, you know, it would suck to do an interview with him if, like, we weren't allowed to talk about his case or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
He,
like,
was really open about it. That's the cool thing. He wasn't, like, holding back. I mean, even, like, joking around when we brought up Pluto Nash, you know, it's, it all happens, but it was still cool. You know?
Pluto Nash. I'm going to call this episode Pluto Nash 3. Just completely, completely disregard the interview.
A strong, powerful story about a horrible sequel.
And just don't include any of the interview. Include just the Pluto Nash parts. The minute.
We had 2 minutes with Leo.
I guess right before we got into the interview, we kind of didn't finish our conversation. Like, how do you see this whole, I guess, what's going on? The Black Lives Matter, the cops shooting. How do you see it? Like, what in your head, what's going on?
In my head, it's...
No, you're wrong.
Oh, darn. Pass.
That's like, even what I put on Facebook before, I'm like, believe it or not, you're allowed to disagree with someone and still get along, you know, like, and it's like, wow, you know, like...
I mean, on the cop side, I can't sit back and deny my opinion. There was no true reason to kill these people. I mean, Louisiana, I think that was Alton's one. I mean, he was clearly on the ground, and all they did was say he's got a gun in his pocket, and I can't see an angle where he was reaching for it, or he was showing any signs where he's like, I'm going to try to kill you. And it just happened. I mean, I don't know how to say we have to look at some. I mean, maybe it's simply put, the cops are scared of black people, for lack of a better term. It's, I know everybody keeps on going, well, there was more white people killed than black people, but there's, what is it, like 3-1 white people to black people, something like that, and... The numbers for people who died because of cops, it's like 411 to like 331, something where it's like so insignificant in the difference where you sit back and go, well, yeah, let's start looking at percentages and stuff. I mean, I don't want to blatantly call out cops for any of this. I mean, I know how stressed out it is. I hear the opinions of some of our comedy friends who are cops, like Eric Potts and Rich McDonald, and those are valid points, but it's just, can you really sit back and say, and maybe the media is glorifying it, but it's kind of like, yeah, but it's not like we're going years in between these instances. Mm-hmm. We didn't even get to a week before we got to our next one.
Yeah. Yeah, 2016 has been utter shit as far as tragedy, like American, even just world, like attacks and everything like that. It's,
I would say America's at an all-time low, just looking at stuff, and not to make it more political, but I'm looking at what's coming up next, and I'm like, bleh.
How do we not talk about, you know, it's almost impossible to not get a little political here. Mm. The Hillary thing this week, like, come on. Mm. The FBI basically like, yeah, she's really guilty, but we don't think she should be brought up on anything. You know, like, any other profession, or if she was anybody else, you know. If there wasn't, I also think if there wasn't Democrats in the office right now, she would have been brought up on everything, you know, and it's just any other profession. What was that general that got, he had like one email he sent or something, and he got fired or whatever, but, you know, she's got thousands, hundreds of different things going on, and it's like, oh, easy come, easy go. You know?
Yeah, like in my company, if there was, I mean, we deal with clinical trials. So, I mean, if you do something where it's found in an R that's insecure, they're coming for your ass. This basically led to 10 people dying?
Benghazi was I think it was 4 or 6, but...
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever. If it was one, you know, it's too many, you know?
It's just like, really?
Yep. The more...
But I didn't want a VPN in.
Yeah, the more this election goes along, the more I hate Hillary Clinton. I've always hated Donald Trump, since the beginning of all this, but the more the weeks go on, the more I cannot stand that woman, and I have... like I've said many times on this cast, Scott Brennan will most likely not be casting a vote this year again. And you can all yell at me, oh, I have to vote, and you're throwing your vote away. Well, to me, I'm throwing my vote away if I vote either one of them. So
it's either going to be Libertarian or Zoltan for me.
My vote is all done, too. And I'll take a picture of it in the booth and post the episode at least. Maybe a couple listens.
Zoltanites, unite!
Yeah, right? Is he on the ticket? Will he definitely be...
I think we would have to write him in. I doubt he's at a percentage where he's just going to naturally be found on the...
Yeah.
He said we can check back with him. Maybe we'll re-interview him.
Yeah. Especially with all the things that are going on now. I should write you in. I'm going to write you in, I think.
Okay.
Michael
Berlew. Good boy. Good for America.
I'll write you in. I'll be your vice president if you win. No problem. All right.
That sounds cool. So we got 2 votes. I mean, I guess the girls will make it 4.
There's no way they're voting for us.
Babe, why does the vote total say I have 2 votes?
I can't even.
I don't know. What
I can't even do my laundry. I never mind run a country. Who would want that job? First off, who would want to be the president of the United States? That is a shit job, man.
Yeah.
No matter what you could be the greatest man alive, do everything in your power, and 50% of the country will hate you.
Yeah.
And talk crap about you for forever. I honestly think that's why everyone thinks Clinton was the last good president, because there was no social media. It was just kind of like when he was done. It didn't come out yet. That's why everyone hates Bush, because he was awful. And now it's 50-50 Obama, and it's going to be that way until things start changing as far as parties, actual parties that are out there.
And then whoever's in the House or Senate... Nowadays, they're so pissed off, they're just like, screw you, I ain't going to help out that other side.
Yeah.
Because they all know whoever wins, the other party's going to win in 4 years.
Yep. Or 8, max, you know, whatever. It's going to bounce back and forth.
Mm.
But it's just, it's a sad state of affairs between shootings and, I mean, the real thing out of all of this is innocent lives lost. Police, the people at the nightclub, the black people who were shot, and the list goes on and on and on. But it's as far as the view from an African American, you have to understand it. Because listen, I was trying to say before we got to Lilo, no matter how you cut it, unless you're completely ignorant, if black people, when it comes to getting arrested or the law, there's so much corruption that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast. He had a guy who's a comic now, but now he's a he used to be a public defender in Wisconsin. And he said every single time that a black kid got brought up on charges, he got the full sentence. So every single time a white kid got up, 3 months probation, a month. He said,
it's for his offense.
Yeah, he said he had to get out of it because it was just so corrupt. He hated being part of the system, you know? Look at the swimmer who raped that girl behind the dumpster. He got 6 months in jail.
Mm-hmm.
His dad literally said the words, I don't want 20 minutes of a bad decision affecting the rest of my life, my son's life. What? Really? So do we all get that 20 minutes to do whatever we want? I go murder a couple people that I don't and then come back. It was only 20 minutes.
Dude, the bullet came out so fast, it wasn't even a minute. Come on now.
Yeah, I mean, you could kill a mass amount of people in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? So we raise our kids to, because he was a good swimmer and he was a smart white kid.
He's so good except for that one time he raped. Why don't you understand this?
Yeah, and how horrific is that? He raped some girl behind a dumpster. Apparently he was taking pictures with a smartphone or something like that.
But he's a good kid. Don't worry.
If that was a black person, prison, 25 years max. And it's 100%
25
true.
Max? I'd say 25 minimum.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Like, that's what I mean. But it's... You're ignorant if you don't think that goes on in this country. That yeah. Black people, by far... They have, when it comes to the law and the institution, the tables are stacked against them.
Yeah, well, it goes back to when I talked to you about the OJ 30 for 30 I watched. Even when the black juror, she said, you know, we cast it on what we saw, but to be honest, after we left, we're kind of like, that's for Rodney King.
Yeah, I mean, so does it come off sometimes like, oh, I can't believe these people are rioting and looting and blah blah. We don't know how that feels, okay? We don't know. Now, are they all right? Do some people take advantage of situations and go loot and go get a new television? Of course. Mm-hmm. We don't know what it's like to see cops in our neighborhood all the time, armed cops all the time on the corners of your neighborhood, taking down your family members, arresting your friends, not doing much to community outreach. It's more of policing, under constant watch. Knowing there's corruption, like if I knew Berlew, I knew you went away and you didn't do something and you got locked up, I'm pissed. And that just carries through families and generations and groups. And when it's multiple of them and it's for years, how, and you see, and of course, that's where the media comes in. There's a dead, they're showing you on the TV, black people being shot. Okay, for what looks like something that could have been handcuffed or tased or clubbed or anything.
Mace. Where,
the guy could have been the worst person ever. That doesn't, we're a country where you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. Also, deadly force is supposed to be the last resort. So, I see both sides of the argument, but I think people are so ignorant when they're like, well, you just gotta, all you have to do is, follow the cops' rules. Well, I'm sorry. If that was a white person, I'm not sure you would be as outraged or you would say the same thing. And I feel for them. Where this is going, I don't know, but it seems like we are going down a dark, dark, dark road.
The only cool thing I found out, I didn't know we had robots with bombs on them.
Yes, yes. Wally. Wally came a long way.
Wally, explode you!
That'd be a great sequel.
Yeah. The super liberals out there now they're worried about, they're talking about, oh.
Did the robot volunteer for this?
But now I saw a couple people post like, oh, well now, you know, aren't we supposed to be proven innocent? Doesn't this guy need a trial? Well,
what?
The guy's got a rifle and he shot five people already and caused major havoc. I don't care if a robot blows him up. I'm sorry.
I'm fairly confident they sent the robot after the guy with the gun.
Yeah.
I don't think, well, there's 10 people up there.
Next is going to be the conspiracy theories like, oh, why did it take so long? How did they know to have the robot around? Was the robot, you know, did the robot train to kill black people?
It was in Texas. Was there a grassy knoll where somebody had a gun?
I don't know, man. It's just, like, it comes down to the Orlando thing. Mm-hmm. There's all these terrible things. But, again, people use it as their platform. To get their personal agenda off when there's a lot of dead people in this country that, you know, aren't coming back. So, but,
on our next episode is a guy who grows his mustache really long.
It was a little serious today. It was a little, it's funny because we're going to be recording two episodes, and the next one, I promise you, next Monday, will be very lighthearted and a little bit more fun. I got some funny stories. But I think, Berlew, it's very hard for us to go from Black Lives Matter, gay club shooting, Lilo Brancato's prison life.
To facebook.com/ TheBurl721.
But you know what? Burl, do you have anything to promote?
Nah, I'll go out on that note.
Okay. I do have something to promote. I found a new comedy room. New comedy room. So new Verbal Shenanigans comedy room. We're going to see how it goes. It's not going to be like Table 42.
Any extra comments to put in there?
No. We'll leave it at that. Because, you know, there's a chance he might be back. Who knows? But this is going to be much more low-key. The show is going to be absolutely free. Ooh. Free to the public. 2-drink minimum. which is not a problem, okay? It's a stellar lineup here. It's going to be on a Thursday at a place called Tap House 15, where I host trivia on Wednesday nights. Right. Really cool place. Nice place. Great beer selection, by the way. So September 1st. September 1st, a little while away, okay? But it'll come quick.
It'll be worth it.
On the show, I'm going to be hosting... I picked a really ginger lineup for this one.
Okay.
Really pale lineup. So I did, there's no guest. I just called them all featuring. Mike Ciccoli.
Very good.
Mike Ciccoli. Jackie Byrne.
Awesome lady.
KP Burke.
I have an issue with this.
What's that?
Well, it's on Thursdays, and now Impact Wrestling is moving to Thursdays, so you might as well get that backup ready.
Oh, God. Oh, KP. True. So true. And headlined by our good friend from the Now What... No, All in Our Heads podcast. They changed the name.
Oh.
Mike Gaffney, Mr. Joe Fernandez.
I know that guy. He's in Aruba having a Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes, yes. I went on a little walk with him the other day with our dogs and whatnot. But, so yeah, look
He's
out for
my
that.
My brother.
Look out for that, and we're going to hopefully have that room going all the time. But
that's a great place, Tap House 15.
It is. What the hell is going on here? So, with that in mind, guys, we're going to cut it, and we're actually going to record a double episode so you get a little insight to how this works. Lilo, thanks for coming on. Please take a look. Please subscribe on iTunes and all that fun stuff. Follow us on Twitter at VS Comedy. I think that's it. Life is funny, I guess.
Might want to leave that out. Might want to cut out that piece.
Laugh at it. Yeah. Keep the wind at your back. Bye, Burlo.
Catch you, Scotty. This was the emotional moment of Pluto Nash. He lost the bar on Mars. Never be too hard to